the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast on the CBP Media Network. My name is Joey. I'm here as always with my co-host, Len. Len, great to see you, brother. How you doing? I see you got the Macho Man Randy Savage shirt. Am I seeing that right?
It's a Savage shirt. Yeah, I got several. But this is not the vintage one that everybody knows. This is basically based off one of his interviews. So yeah, man, it is a Savage shirt, but it's not the one that everybody recognizes. It's a very unique one. And I get a good laugh of it sometimes when people recognize it.
I love it, man. It's a great t-shirt. I just bought last week two of those Madex t-shirts. The guy who does the graphics for Bull Bitcoin does a lot of really cool, I don't know if I call it abstract, it's like pretty metal looking artwork around Bitcoin and around hard money ethos, and got like a little bit of a religious undertone. In the after show, I'll pull up the website and show you. But very, very cool stuff. But hey,
you got a handy show now.
I don't have it. I don't have the shirts either. Actually, I even lost the order emails that he sent out. So I messaged him and I'm like, hey man, like, sorry to bother you. I hate to be that guy, but I'm a millennial. And so naturally, as soon as I order something, I'm refreshing the tracking for 2 weeks until it shows up. So.
Well, you can put the image on the blockchain. You can make an ordinal out of it and keep it there.
No,
what a disaster that's turning out to be, by the way.
No ordinals talk. Okay, we'll talk about what's going on the CBP network. Well, let's do one thing here first, okay?
Yes.
We got a new sponsor. That sponsor is EasyDNS, okay? You guys know EasyDNS. You like EasyDNS. We use EasyDNS. And we've had the sole proprietor of EasyDNS on the program many times, Mark Jeftovic. And there's a lot of stuff going on in EasyDNS that we really like. And that's why we're using them and why we're taking them on service. Number one, okay, maybe most importantly, they take Bitcoin for their services over at EasyDNS. So if you're building a website, you want to start some mail hosting or do some other stuff, VPS stuff, you can do it with them and pay in Bitcoin. That's number one, okay? There's not too many OG companies like these guys who take Bitcoin and are true to the ethos. Now, some other stuff I want to mention here. If you have, like we do, an idle URL over at GoDaddy, and you're like, you know what? I'm leaving it there because it's easy. I'm not really doing much with it. Maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. But they have a valet service where, because they know how easy it is to just leave stuff behind and, you know, forget about it, they'll help you move the site over, which is pretty cool, man. I like that a lot. So we're going to use that. We're going to start our website, get stuff going there, and you can look up for some stuff that we're doing with the CBP Media Network on our new website. And, you know, maybe most importantly, Len, apart from the Bitcoin, EasyDNS will never bow to the whiny crowd of Karens who want you banned or silenced for your content. Incredible.
And furthermore, there's one thing I'm not sure you're aware of, but if you do some digging, and if you look at a list of relays on Nostr, you will find one that is under the name EasyDNS, EasyDNS.com, I think it is. Check it out. The fact that they also have a relay, I don't know if they're running it or somebody's running it on theirs. I do not know, but that to me is bullish. PV, Joey, PV.
I love it, man. So if you watch a show, listen to the show, I'm sure you all, you know, are frequent viewers and listeners. Hit Mark up on Twitter, Stunt Pope, if you have questions. And if you want to talk to us about our experience, we're happy to do it. We're still in the process of building this stuff out. And my wife, sure to be happy about this, because if we didn't hook up with Mark and EasyDNS, we would have probably leaned on Kenzie to, you know, build us a website. And that's probably the last thing she wants to do after she gets home from work. So this is going to be good for CBP. So yeah, happy to have a new sponsor. Of course, you know, we've had Mark on a few times, as I mentioned. He's a great OG Canadian Bitcoiner. And we hope that you'll give EasyDNS a look. It's going to be more to come from EasyDNS, from Bomb Thrower, all those different sort of Jeftovic empire properties. So we're thrilled to have them as a sponsor. And Len, I should mention that you know, I think it's good for us and appropriate for us to take on a guy like Mark and Easy DNS. And there may be other sponsors in the future. I'm not going to give away any surprises there, but that are core to this ethos of self-sovereignty. And part of that is running your own website, your own email stuff and all that sort of jazz with a company. If you're going to use a company, with a company that's going to have your back when push comes to shove. And that's exactly what we want, exactly what we're going to get. And we're looking forward to it. I think that about covers it. Hey, Len, what do you think?
I was slightly incorrect. It's noster.easydns.ca. So there you go. noster.easydns.ca. That is the relay. So I just want to keep pumping it because Noster is where it's at. When you want to get Bitcoin, all signal, no noise, and you can just listen to the people that you're talking to and following, nothing more. There's no algorithm feeding you garbage. There's no promotional garbage. It's pure, pure signal.
That's right. So let's do a little housekeeping for what's been going on. So last week, I sat down with Dennis Porter for about 45 minutes, 50 minutes, and did a great, I think, great interview. I've had a lot of good feedback from a lot of friends of ours about the content of that interview. Dennis is the co-founder of the Satoshi Action Fund in the States, which is a policy sort of, I don't want to say think tank, it's a nonprofit, but they do a lot of work with politicians educating on Bitcoin and specifically proof of work, which I think is an important, it's an important tool that we can leverage as far as favorable outcomes in policymaking vis-a-vis energy policy. We talked a lot about what they're doing, some of the hurdles they've seen, and some of the hurdles they've overcome. Dennis was saying that they just actually had some legislation passed during the show, which was fantastic. So have a look at that. This week, I'm going to sit down with HODL D against my better judgment to talk about ordinals. And we may have a special guest come into that. I don't want to spoil it, but you know, part of the process of doing content is booking guests kind of in a sweet spot, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, something like that. And we may have almost double booked, and it may almost turn out in our favor to have two people come on and talk about ordinals. D obviously is sort of in the pro ordinals camp. I think I don't want to mischaracterize his view, but so we're looking forward to talking to him about that. If I can figure out how to stream a show in person, him and I live in the same city in Hamilton. So I may actually then go see him and do the show live in person with a little bit of extra gear, the same way we did for a couple of the Bitcoin meetups or one of the Bitcoin meetups. I think I can do it if I can figure it out tomorrow, if I have some time tomorrow night after Valentine's Day.
I can't see how that could be a technical issue, especially given the fact that we're using this software StreamYard for
Two mics. I think I got to hook up my H6 to two mics and then to my computer. I'm pretty sure that's all it'll take. I just want to double check. I think we're going to try and do it in person on Wednesday is all I'm saying. I'm not guaranteeing it, especially if we have a guest, but if it's just the two of us, you know, we can make it if we try, as the song goes. So looking forward to that. I think that's all for our housekeeping stuff. Do you have anything you want to add to that? Any fountain stuff?
Well, I'd like to hear his thoughts because somebody inscribed a 3D print of something that's called a Yankee Boogle or Boggle. That's from what I understand, it's a 3D printed gun that's now unfortunately printed and inscribed on Bitcoin. So cue up the government overreach. It's inevitable. It's going to come around and... yes, it's going to be a very, very challenging time if you think that the government is going to be able to get involved and try to see what's going on with your node and make sure that you're not doing anything that is not legal with it. So I don't know, just my two cents. I just want to chalk off a few things here. It's been a couple of weeks since I've done anything with Fountain, the boosts and the comments, because I was having some issues with my Fountain. It's now been resolved, so I'll go back a little bit to last week. Mo BTC Dick says, do you guys have stacking goals? I recently hit one of mine. I was wondering if you guys have any amount goals you're trying to make. To be perfectly honest, myself, no. I have no particular stacking goal. You, Joey?
I mean, I will say that I turned down my RSP contribution and turned up my Bitcoin buys a little while ago. So I don't know, do I have a Bitcoin stacking figure? No, but it's as much as possible these days. And it's not financial advice, but I think that the more you look around, and we'll talk about this on the show, I'm sure, the more you look around at the landscape, especially if you're trying to buy Bitcoin at an exchange, you may not have a ton more time to do that friction-free. So if that's how you're acquiring, I would just say, you know, AMAP is probably the goal for most people at the moment.
And Second Breakfast writes, ordinals will work themselves out. Once it becomes stupid expensive to put NFT apes on the blockchain, then people will realize how precious block space is. Let the free market develop and decide. Layer 2s will benefit from base layer congestion as well as act as a release valve. Very interesting point. Don't want to say anything more than that. I think we voiced our opinions on
ordinals. We'll talk about it on Wednesday too. D's got a lot to say. So he'll take a break from hosting these 24-hour spaces on JPEGs, and we can talk about it.
And a couple of one. We got two similar comments, MoBTC Dick and Teets. Each writes, one says, breaking, this was a great episode. Another one writes, breaking, great show. This is with respect to your interview with Dennis Porter. So I like that. Very cool. That's it, Joey.
Incredible.
That's it for my stuff that I want to talk about. We could just dive right into it.
First, you know, we got to do the normal... I don't even know.
It's sad that we're talking about this price of Bitcoin now.
The price, 21,781 US right now.
$29,046 in Canadian dollars. Now, you know what? I decided, you know what, Joey? There's three topics one we always talk about is going to be Clown World. That's one of the topics I want to bring up. There's a couple others. I want to see what other people are thinking we should talk about first. I want to hear your opinions. I have Kraken and, what happened with the stakers where they got wrecked. And also, we have CBDCs that are going to be potentially talked about more in depth in the UK. Which topic fancies you? Clown World, Kraken, or the CBDC talk? And I want to hear what people say too. Joey? Oh no, we lost him.
I'm back. Oh. I would like to talk Kraken first, maybe. I think the Kraken thing is important and has the most tentacles if I had to choose.
Well said. Well, since nobody else is, because we're in delay, so by the time we get their feedback, we'll go Kraken first. And it's some interesting news that took place in this past week, and that I don't have too much here on, because I'm gonna just I could rail on this for a while. But before we go on, Brian Armstrong, just this past week, he was saying that he was anticipating that the SEC was going to be removing some staking services for US retailers. And quote from him, staking is a really important innovation in crypto. It allows users to participate directly in running and open crypto networks. Staking brings many positive improvements to the space, including scalability, increased security, and reduced carbon footprint. I don't know what's this whole deal with carbon footprint. Security, no. Scalability, I don't think so. It really, when you deal with a proof of stake, it truly is, unfortunately, centralized. So scalability, it's all up to the people that are running it. Security, again, it's the people that are running it, how it's secure they want it to be. So I don't buy any of this. To reduce carbon footprint, fine. I'll give you that. But who the fuck gives a shit about that? It's proof of stake. It doesn't really do anything. It's like getting fiat currency airdropped to you. I took a look to see into this. Coinbase, they earned $120 million in revenue from blockchain rewards, in the first 9 months of 2021. So clearly they made quite a bit of money on the staking platform, staking as a service as what they're providing customers. And over the same period in 2022, that grew by 77% to $213 million. So that's in the first 9 months of 2022. I'm not sure what's happened since then, but just based off that, I'm looking at it and saying, there's a connection between earning revenue for these CEOs that are running the staking a service for customers. And it's understandable why they're trying to protect it, because they're trying to pad their own pocketbook. Well, after Brian Armstrong came out with this on Twitter, the very next day, the SEC came out and banned Kraken from staking for US customers, only US customers. And this is the staking as a service. And it's quoted here, when investors provide tokens to staking as a service providers, they lose control of those tokens and take on risks associated with those platforms with very little protection, end quote. That's from the SEC. Mm-hmm. Note that they're talking about very little protection here. This is very, very important, because no matter what you do, I don't care if you register with the SEC, I don't care what you do, the fact that it's still a very centralized and you're not getting enough information and there's a veil of secrecy when it goes on with proof of stake, there is very little protection along with it. Is you are essentially giving up your tokens to somebody else to hold on to it and hopefully cross your fingers, you get some sort of yield as a result of that. What did Kraken get from this? They got a penalty from the SEC fine of $30 million. And how much is this going to impact Kraken? It's hard for me to say because it's not a publicly traded company. So I'm just going based on what I could find, which was very, very little. They posted net revenues in 2020 of $1.1 billion and also a profit at that year, $322 million. So quite a bit. And note they reported a loss the previous year, 2019, of $30 million. So they lost $30 million in 2019, made $322 million in 2020. I have no idea 2021 or 2022. Again, not a publicly traded company. It's hard to get any information here. But from what I could gather with the SEC, this seems to be like a two-pronged attack. Number one, they're going after exchanges. And then the second one, they're going after the staking services, the staking itself, the actual coins, the tokens, whatever you want to call it. And very, very interesting. So if you look at the exchange, how they're going after it, they're asking them now, they have to ensure that they're living and abiding by the SEC rules. This only applies for U.S. customers. Outside of the U.S., anything goes. It's fucking the wild, wild west. Did some little bit more research into here. And I think you're familiar with this because you did some investigating. You decided to stake a little bit of ETH because you wanted to see if you could unstake it at one time. And
I want to see how easy it was to stake it without them even really telling you that it's basically gone for some indeterminate amount of time. The answer is very easy. It's very easy.
And what you put in there, I understand correctly that you can't take it out. It's still stuck there and there's nothing to do. Like,
it's all there. Yeah.
Okay. So Kraken, they said they're going to be unstaking any assets staked by U.S. customers. And they're doing this for everything except for staked Ether, which won't be unstaked until after Ethereum's network Shanghai upgrade takes effect. So really, U.S. clients, they got rugged if they're holding on to ETH. I don't think they're going to be able to collect any rewards, interest, staking rewards for having now their ETH still stuck on Kraken, and they're unable to take it out. So they're getting the worst of all worlds here. They don't have access to their tokens, and they're not getting any rewards for having somebody else holding on to their tokens. What an absolute fucking joke. I did some research here. And I know this is an attack against Kraken, but I suspect this is going to be a wider scale attack that will involve other tokens out there, because they're not going to just stop at this, stop at Kraken. Heck no. I think everything that's operating within the U.S. soil that's offering these services is going to be potentially going to get the same type of ruling. Also, anything that is running within the United States that has, like, if you have like a Lido or whatever within there, it's going to be fucking given this treatment by the SEC. There's now approximately, let me get this number here, 16 million ETH right now that's locked up in staking. That's a lot of ETH that's staked right now. 16 million. Now, how much of that is from US customers? I do not know. It's hard to say.
Is there any way to know? Like, there's no possible. So I guess here's my question then. Mm-hmm. If we can tell there's 16 million staked ETH, why can't we tell where it originated? Surely the brokers, right, the platforms have this information available. I don't think there's a lot of retail that has enough ETH to stake. It's 32 minimum, right? That was the number, 32 minimum to stake.
That's yes. If you want to do it on your own, you have to have 32 to stake. And if you can't, that's why you went to these staking pools, staking as a service. Good question. What you're asking there, I don't know. Perhaps they have this information. It's been all KYC'd. I do not know, but until I'm told otherwise, I'm going to leave that as a true question mark. And if I look at this, of the 16 million, Kraken had 1.2 million of ETH that was locked up. That's a decent amount, but that's number four. Now, if they go after Coinbase, which has 2 million, Unknown has 3.9 million staked ETH. Unknown, they didn't even fucking put a fucking name to it. And Lido Finance is number one at 4.6 million. There's a lot of fucking ETH out there that could potentially be locked up and stuck in limbo if the SEC decides to go after Lido, Coinbase, fucking even Binance too. So there's a lot of things out there. So I'm just going to conclude here. The whole staking process, we've been talking about it. It's an absolute joke. But unless you talk to Bankless, where they say, quote, staking is not a crime, end quote. Could you imagine the bankless people? They decided they were saying that it is not a fucking crime. What a bunch of no coiners. But it's not going to end here. Do you think it's going to end here? Heck no. The New York Department of Financial Securities, they have announced that the stablecoin issuer Paxos is going to be investigated. And Paxos, they have the stablecoins USDP, that's the Pax dollar. Also, they have the Binance USD, BUSD. This is big. Mm-hmm. And apparently they plan to sue Paxos on listing Binance USD coin. I think this is all relevant to going after Kraken, to talking about staking services, and now dealing with the stable coins. This is sending a message out there. Unfortunately, what's transpired, it took down the price of Bitcoin a little bit, 10%, whatever the heck it was, because there is some indirect exposure between Bitcoin and these shitcoins. And once there's some unwind over there, unfortunately, Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin suffers as a result. But there's going to be more of this coming down the pipe. And when it does happen, don't be surprised if you see the price of Bitcoin back in the 19s, 18s, or even lower. Because I don't know what the fuck's going to happen moving forward. But I think the SEC, they're ready to fucking start war with a lot of these things.
There's pretty clearly an enforcement regime taking shape here. Nick Carter wrote a piece about choke points. You know, maybe we can talk about that when we get to CBDCs. But I think he's right. If I look at what is going on with Kraken and staking more broadly, two things, right? Kraken, Coinbase, Binance, all these companies take advantage of this 32 ETH minimum. And what they do is they corral as much capital in Ether and other tokens as they can from people who just don't have 32 ETH to do the validation. And the problem is that when you get all those people together, Len, that's when the securitization problem shows up. Because what you're doing there is relying on the centralized body, Kraken, Coinbase, whatever, to act in a way that passes the Howey test, to act in a way that supports outcomes as far as the value of those tokens when they're under their control. That's my understanding. So these people who are saying, well, the bankless guys, for example, staking is not a crime. Well, probably not. If you do it yourself, it's probably not a crime. You're probably right about that. But if you give it to someone else to do on your behalf and they also take a cut, you know, which you sort of mentioned there, one of the reasons they do this corralling of assets is because they take a little bit of a cut of the staked ETH rewards or staked whatever rewards for themselves, for their coffers. It's not that hard to figure this out. So, you know, the thing about protecting people, Len, you mentioned this sort of not your keys, not your coins thing, like Gensler actually said in an interview, which is a bit unbelievable. This guy is like trying to maybe under the radar gain back the trust of Bitcoiners. This is a problem the SEC is going to have to deal with soon. And I think that if you look at Armstrong's recent tweets and sort of recent public attitudes about the space, specifically about crypto rather than Bitcoin, I would say that he knows there's enforcement action coming and he wants to start getting in front of this conversation. And I think he knows Coinbase is a target. Coinbase is like sort of this unbelievable story, right? They're the Uber of the crypto space. They did all this stuff, set up all this infrastructure and back end when this stuff was barely even known to much of the population. You know, 2016, 17, I think was the first time I ever heard of Coinbase. And then I used them in 2017 to buy my first Bitcoin, as I'm sure you did. I think we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. And I think this was a model that really worked for a lot of tech companies. This sort of build it and then they will come and then we'll crush the regulators after because public opinion will be so heavily in our favor. The problem is that third part never really happened for Coinbase. There's a lot of people who don't like Bitcoin and even more people who don't like crypto. And so they're having a hard time winning that battle of messaging. And in the court of public opinion, I would say that they're probably losing overall. All that said, okay, there's a couple of big questions here that are yet to be answered. One is, what about Ethereum staking? Is the ETH that's staked on these platforms securitized or is it not? I'm not a securities lawyer. Even if I was, I wouldn't be your securities lawyer, Anon, listener, viewer. I would just say that this to me is a similar outcome in all likelihood, unless these guys at the SEC and other regulatory agencies are holding bags, basically, is what I would say. we talked about this with Dennis Porter a little bit on last week's show. You know, should we be dancing on the graves of these other tokens, Ethereum or the smaller ones, when legislative, you know, quote unquote losses come down from above and land on their networks? I honestly think that the answer is no. It's fine to say I told you so and try and corral people with good information into Bitcoin and tell them why this is not going to happen over here or why we think it's not going to happen over here. But at the end of the day, I really do think that there's a wedge being driven into the space here via staking, via FTX, via securitization, via all these different enforcement actions and avenues for enforcement actions. And to think that it's not going to show up on Bitcoin's door at some point in the near future is, I think, a little naive. I believe that this is probably going to happen inside of the next year. And the question that Bitcoiners have to answer is, are you... You know, Matt O'Dell says this all the time, and he's right. He's been saying this for years. When it's time to become a private Bitcoin user, are you going to have to learn how to do it, or are you already going to be doing all these things? I see in the chat, Paulie talking about running your own node. You and I have talked about, you know, making sure you're using privacy tools. I've mentioned Sparrow before. We've talked about Cold Card before, all these different things. That's one question. Is this a wedge into Bitcoin, and what about Ethereum? I would also ask, as far as this sort of onshoring, offshoring of bad behavior, quote unquote bad behavior. I personally don't care if you stake whatever you want. If someone's willing to pay you for the tokens, like, whatever, God bless you. But the question I have is about the mechanisms through which people can stake. I, as part of my experiment, when I decided whether or not to use Wealthsimple or another platform, I remembered that my Ledger has that web app thing. You remember Ledger had that Chrome app?
Ledger Live?
It's Ledger Live now, but it used to be this Chrome app. Anyway, so I went to Ledger Live, and you can stake anything you want on basically any of those platforms vis-a-vis the Ledger Live app. How does Ledger Live know where I'm located? Can I just stake there regardless of what the SEC says about whether or not I can use Kraken or another an American domiciled exchange? I don't know. To me, this also has a little bit of a tie into the sovereign individual thesis, where governments are, again, they're heavy-handed because they're so far behind. And the level of heavy-handedness correlates with the distance behind the eight ball that they are. And this is, I think, the first good example of this that we've seen in the last, you know, 18 months or so. We're going to ban staking from U.S. exchanges. It's too late. You can stake anywhere you want with a Ledger. As far as I can tell, you can do it on any of these staking platforms, any token, any network, any pool from your wallet. So, you know, how are they planning on stopping that? Are they going to go door to door and ask people to see the Ledger Live app? I don't know. But all this stuff is, you know, at the end of the day, it's driving towards one thing, Len. And that thing is, the regulatory landscape is starting to take shape, and it's very, very negative for crypto. Crypto for now, I think just crypto. For Bitcoin, it's going to be a lot harder because of all the decentralization we talked about. And I look at this and I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of people who are discouraged by the lack of staking that they're able to do now, quote unquote, able to do, depending on how you view that ability based on all the tools we've mentioned here. But, you know, Bitcoin Twitter, I think, has done a pretty good job. At least my feed looks pretty good these days compared to the last bear market where this kind of shit was happening. Stuff was going to zero. I look at this and I think, you know, this is a good opportunity for us to bring people in. I think my feed is doing a good job of it. I don't know what your feed looks like or what Nosser looks like on this front, but the things have changed, I think, by and large. They've gone from dunking on people who have regulatory losses to reminding them, inviting them, and educating them on why Bitcoin helps you avoid this and how you can still preserve some, you know, some store of value, some value, you know, of your time and wealth and all these different things that Bitcoiners love to talk about without worrying about regulatory losses like this. I do still think though, Len, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts because you touched on it and I'm touching on it now. I think this is the beginning of what's going to be a very difficult time for Bitcoin coming down the pipe here, vis-a-vis its availability through fiat on-ramps of any nature. It's going to become very difficult. What do you think?
I think they might put some roadblocks up for that. I don't think that, in my personal opinion, it's going to be the first thing on their agenda. They look at these yield services, and that's the ones that are really on their radar, the ones that are really going to be knocking off. And sorry?
I was just gonna say I didn't mean to cut you off there. The yield services, like if I look at this from the point of view of the U.S. government or any government, Canadian government, one of the mm-hmm. European governments, doesn't matter. If I look at this from their point of view, I see two different vehicles, right? I see Bitcoin and I see the stuff you can stake. The stuff that people can stake is simply not a threat, right? The government, I don't think, views those things as a threat to their sovereignty, to their currency hegemony, to their monopoly on distribution of wealth, to their Cantillon effect, all these things. But when I think about how they might view Bitcoin, I can't help but imagine they see it as a much more predominant threat. So, you know, when you say that the staking thing is on their mind a lot more than Bitcoin is, why do you say that?
It's because the yield that's being offered, it's very competitive and it's taking away some of the money that could potentially be put on traditional banks and or buying bonds or treasuries or anything along those lines. So I think they want to put an end to that. When I look at the website for Kraken, for instance, some of the products they're offering there are up to 24% yield per year. 24%. And when I look at it, when you look at how much is being offered on there, what they're the staking services, what you could stake on, and I'm going to name them, and I'll be perfectly honest, a lot of them I have never heard of. Not that I would be hearing, but I see Cardano on there, I see Atom on there, I've heard of these things, ETH, but Algorand, never heard Algorand, of them. Flare, yeah. Flow, Kava, Kusama, Mina, Polkadot, Polygon, heard of those, Secret, Solana, Tezos.
You should only be allowed to name your coin after one of the original 150 Pokemon. I don't want to see any silver and gold, okay? Red and blue, and that's it.
You know, I look at Cosmos, you can get 22%, up to 22% yield, and what they call bonded 21D. I don't know what that is. Is that a diet in AD&D? I have no fucking clue. But... You know, I'm like 24% from Bonded Secret. Like, what is this coin? Is this like, I have no clue what the fuck it is. And where's the yield coming from? I suspect there's more money coming in. And I think that's another thing that they're looking at. They want to make sure that it's transparent when these companies are offering these staking as a service products. Is where is the yield coming from? If you cannot totally provide that information up front to your customers, you have a problem, because then it could be potentially a Ponzi scheme, and the SEC does not want to have anything to do with it. They want to close the doors to that and to provide some level of consumer protection over there. And I say this, and it's tongue in cheek, because the SEC, let's be perfectly honest, there's been so many fucking rug pulls that happened in the stock market where the SEC has purview over that. So not to say that if the SEC does something, it's going to be able to stop a lot of this. No, but they want to do something, and they're trying to show, look, we're here for the common guy. We're here for the consumers out there. Don't put your money in here. If you want to put it and earn some money, buy some bonds or put it in a bank or something like that. Or maybe buy – that's what I think they're trying to do. Or they're trying to stop this, because if this is a runaway freight train, if more and more money comes in and people could earn 24% on something, yeah, why wouldn't they do it? I don't know.
I could tell
you a thousand reasons why they shouldn't, but
well, they shouldn't. But and you're saying some of the same things that are being said in the chat. They want to chalk up an easy win, right? Make it look like they're protecting someone. The people whom are affected by this, right, know that the SEC is sort of, you know, in the worst interpretation, incompetent and, you know, intentionally deceptive, and in the best interpretation, you know, painfully late. So like, again, like I ask myself this question all the time, like, who is this for? Who is being sold this false bill of goods? I don't know, but it's certainly not the people they're protecting. It's people who have no money in the space, that don't know any better, that, you know, eat this up with a spoon and like it. There's always another angle, and probably we're not thinking about it right now. Maybe it'll be like, you know, in 3 months, we'll talk about this and look back and be like, you know, we were talking about this. We missed this piece.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I'm a little worried.
He's going to look at that point with the, you know, hindsight will be 2020. Yeah. Another thing to take into consideration, there is no election that's looming. So anything the SEC is doing right now, it's theoretically should be done without any hindrance from politics.
It's Gensler's agenda as opposed to a political agenda.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that's the case, but I mean, I could be wrong, and I've been wrong a million times in the past before, and I'll be wrong a million times moving forward. But yeah, I mean, we should. Do you want anything else to talk about this before we move on to the next topic, or
nothing else to add, man? Interesting stuff to keep an eye on. Regulation is, you know, interested in you, even if you are not interested in it, and we're finding that out more and more.
Now, I just want to go back to a message that was written in the chat some time ago. Jacob, who donated some money to us, thank you very much. So the message that you he said that go grab some tahinis for you and D from with the money that he donated. And so, yeah, and also he wants to say that if you want to get some flowers for a lady, check out Edna Miller, flowers from across the road from tahinis. I'm assuming he's talking about the tahinis in Hamilton.
Street. Yeah, Jacob, let me know in the chat if that's the one in the West End there. D lives, I think, downtown somewhere. I've never been to his spot, but I think he lives with his lady too. So if we can figure it out, I think maybe I'll end up having him come here, but at some point, you know, maybe I'll do all that stuff. It's funny, man. Like the number of tahinis posts I see on Twitter, like it never stops. Everyone is always talking about, no matter what else is going on my feed. It doesn't matter if there's alien balloons or Russian invasions. There's always something about tahinis on my feed.
You know, I suspect that those balloons have to be an airdrop NFT. It has to be that. It makes sense. The timing of everything.
You know how hard it was for me today to explain to my French instructor that I was following the balloon story on the news yesterday. I can't say, like, I didn't know any of the words related to hot air balloons. It's like I forget the name of the balloon in French, but very strange. Very strange. What
fucking.
Me neither.
All right. You know what? Let's transition to the next topic, and I want to talk. Well, we should talk about Clown World news before we go to CBDCs. We'll do that last. Sure. So Clown World will do next. And the Washington Examiner, they have a very prestigious newspaper. they've reported that the federal deficit, this is for the U.S., was $460 billion through the first 4 months of this fiscal year. And the Treasury Department reported that this is a 78% increase from the same period a year before. So $460 billion already burned, and it's 78% increase from the same period from last year. Some of this has to be done with inflation, because the price of a dollar from yesteryear is not the same it is now. So that could have some impact on that. But it just goes to show you that government spending is making up a heck of a lot of what is being reported in the GDP.
For sure.
And of note, too, last year is when the spending for the pandemic emergency programs, they were winding down and they were wrapping up. So a lot of that was captured in last year, not in this year. So what is being spent? What's the money being spent on? Man, I don't know. So in fact, the U.S. has borrowed $39 billion this January alone, $39 billion. And while January last year saw $119 billion surplus, so rather than having a surplus, which they reported last year, this year they're borrowing $39 billion. Really, if you look at the difference, it's 133% difference. That's a massive difference. But we keep things moving on. And I know this is something I believe and I hope is that you may find contentious. So feel free to interrupt me, because I think you may want to talk about this. 64% of Americans apparently are living paycheck to paycheck.
And we do have to talk about this, because you and I have talked about this on the show before, but Bitcoiners hop on this stat like flies on shit. And like the accounts that tweet them out are always like Unusual Whales or, you know, Mario Narfwhal or whatever that guy is. He's always doing Twitter spaces. Like under the auspices proposed in that question, I am living paycheck to paycheck. Len is living paycheck to paycheck. Many of you probably living paycheck to paycheck. The question offers a nice headline if you want to grab some attention on the back end. But when you're asked the question on the survey, when you look at the survey, the question is basically, do you keep cash paycheck to paycheck? And the answer for most people is no. You may have like some savings, you may have some investing, Bitcoin, equities, whatever. But the odds that you keep in your checking account any amount of money that's substantial week to week is very low. You know what I mean? Your savings are one thing, your investments are another thing, and your checking account, the account you use to buy milk or whatever, right? Doesn't have a lot of cash in it. Mine certainly doesn't. I have all those other vehicles I just talked about. So don't always take that at face value. That said, 64% is still pretty high. That's a lot of people who are you know, doing that investing. And I don't think it's representative of the entire sort of affluent crowd of people who are doing things, you know, broadly speaking, the right way financially. So I think there are some people in there who are living paycheck to paycheck and buying Kraft dinner for every meal, you know, teetering on scurvy and ruin. But there's many more people who are not. And just be aware of that when you quote that stat. That's all.
I knew this would elicit a response from you. So
this is just so dumb. Like all the same Bitcoin engagement boys on Twitter, like, oh, look at this stat. What the fuck? Who cares? You didn't read the survey question? Like, you should always read the survey question. Other thing too is like oftentimes these surveys are conducted by government contracted agencies. And so, you know, again, we talk all the time about how not necessarily because of, you know, nefarious intent, but oftentimes because of old models and old methods, government numbers are unreliable in the best of times. And these are like times we've never seen before. So if you think that you should view all these other numbers with a skeptical lens, you got to view this one with a skeptical lens too. And this is exactly why, because it's a clear misrepresentation of the question and answer.
Yeah, but I could add some color to this though.
Okay.
So U.S. credit card debt, it's now soared to close to $1 trillion. That's now been accumulated on credit cards alone. It's now sitting at $930.6 billion. So the fact that you have that much debt on a credit card, which would lead me to believe they don't have the cash required to pay off that debt, because nobody wants to carry a balance in their credit card just given how hefty the interest rates are now more than ever. And in fact, it's noted here that in November, the credit card debt in the United States increased the most in 20 years. So more money was piled in credit cards in November than it was any other time in the previous 20 years. So that's probably another indication that they don't have the cash handy in order to pay it. I think that's just poor financial planning, poor spending habits, just to keep that much money on credit cards. But it's a ticking time bomb. But I'll even add a little bit more color to this one, too. Gen Z. And I'm going to start off there. I'll go all the way to baby boomers. So Gen Z, this is for people that are born from between 1997 and 2012. So a lot of young people. It's noted here that they have median savings of $33,000. This is their retirement savings. $33,000 for this group of people. I think that's actually pretty good, because if you think about it, somebody from 2012 isn't working, but somebody in 1997, it's still, you're very, very young. So have saved up $33,000 in your retirement savings after going through schooling and all the other things you have to pay for. I'm going to have to give them kudos for that. It's not bad, but it slides from here. I'm giving the Gen Z, they did really good here. Gen Y, this is born from 81 to 96. They have a median retirement savings of $50,000, a mere $50,000 is being reported. Gen X, this is from 65 to 1980, $87,000 in retirement savings.
Wow. And
baby boomers. This is born from 46 to 64. The median savings they have is for retirement, $162,000. There's no money that people have saved up. And the people that seem to have the most money saved up proportional to how much they've worked is Gen Z.
I would forgive the millennials and even some of the Xers, because they wouldn't have hit their highest earning years yet. They're probably just about to, in the case of the Xers, the young Xers anyways.
Yes.
And the millennials for sure, I'm a millennial. I'm like right smack dab at the front end. I think I'm in 87, and I definitely have not hit my highest earning years. And, you know, I still am paying a mortgage every month. So if you at the end of your career, when both those things are kind of lined up in your favor, you would imagine the savings rate would pick up. But then you hit me with the boomer number, and that's like brutal, man. Brutal.
And Jacob's asking how many Gen Z are living at home.
Yeah, now, I have a lot of them. That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
I got the numbers here. 25% of adults between 25 and 34. Now that's not Gen Z. That's a little bit more than that, but it's still the younger people out there. So 25% of adults between age 25 and 34 are living with their parents as of 2021, 2022. So I think that is a decent number. And I'm going to go on to say that's probably a very good thing to do if you could do that without going into debt. Like, you know, you're probably going to have to be paying rent to your parents in this situation. Socially, it's probably going to be very awkward for you to say you live with your parents. So I understand there's a huge negative.
Okay, so I'll tell you, I have something to say about this.
Go ahead.
I lived at home until I was 28.
Trying to put this in the right way without
getting friendly,
banned, right?
There's friendly language here. Yeah, I'll tell you, it's not really a negative to live at home at all.
Boom, I agree.
Basically, yeah. Even socially, because a lot of your friends were in a similar situation. Certainly a lot of the romantic partners I courted were in similar situations. And so I never really took any flack for that. But anyway, yeah, continue. I think everything you're saying is spot on. I know you got more to say, so keep going.
No. Go on. If you have something you want to go on this
particular topic, It's easy to say. So, okay, a couple things. People give millennials, I think, a hard time for this. I still have friends who maybe don't live at home, but are renting apartments, for example, instead of buying a house. And there's, I think, been this like psyop. I hesitate to use the term, but that you have to buy a house to start a family and be happy. And the size of your house translates to how successful you are. Having done the house thing and, you know, now being in the part where I want to start a family, I don't think this is true. And I think that more millennials are realizing that material things are not really the be all and end all in this world. The Zoomers, the broccoli hair crowd, they realized that even earlier. And I think they realized it out of necessity because they don't have any money. So they have no money. It's hard to find a job. Their education is more expensive, blah, blah, blah. And I think it's benefited them. Now, the question I have for you, and maybe for the audience too, the growth of the economy depends on that generation consuming, because those tax receipts are going to fund entitlements for the biggest group of entitlement recipients that we've ever seen, some mix of boomers, Xers, and millennials over the next 30 years, which is incredible to say. Like, if I look at, like, my dad's 65, he's been retired for about 10 or 12 years. And it's feasible, Len, that in 20 years when I retire, he'll still be collecting his pension.
Yes.
Which has never happened. And when you have a generation of Zers who, you know, don't want to consume or would rather save money to try and buy a house that hasn't been sold by boomers yet, it's going to be very hard to get that tax sheet number to where it needs to be. Now, you and I have talked about, you know, tax sheets are a very small portion of the pie. A lot of it is printed, inflated, blah, blah, blah. But it's again, like a really weird and very much unprecedented dynamic to conceive of. A bunch of people who don't view working or job or their employment status as valuable, either from an economic side or a social status side, being the only contributors to the entitlement pot. That's a weird place to be. I don't know what their kids will be like, but the problem right now is that they're probably not even thinking about having kids, right? It's too expensive. They don't want to. They don't care. Sort of romantic standards have changed, I think, for better or worse, I don't know, depending on who you ask. But it's going to be weird, man, the next 20 years. Like,
the apple doesn't fall far from the tree when they do have kids. It's going to be
I know, right? So what's the plan there? I don't know. And don't forget, we talked about this before, like from the standpoint of, you know, let me just do my old man on the porch telling kids to get off my lawn. Kids have no social skills now. So I think it's become harder to court a mate. And because of the environment that they're in, as far as, you know, what's appropriate, inappropriate, risk-taking behavior is really penalized a lot more harshly now. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I don't think any gender should have to go through, you know, uncomfortable situations in the name of, sexual courtship or romantic courtship. But there is a little push and pull in dating and in romance. And as kids get older, they may be afraid to take those chances because of where sort of things are sitting socially. So all that to say, I don't know. What, like, do you have a take on this? You have a young daughter. Like, well, I don't know. Like, what have you considered this at all? You and your wife talk about this? I have no idea.
No, not as of yet. She's very active in terms of going out there and dealing with things. So she's in a lot of programs, so she's interacting with people. Plus, she goes to school. So there's so much out there that just encourages her to enhance her social skills. So that's one aspect that I think that is good for her. But, you know, it is, I guess we'll have to cross certain bridges once we get there, but we'll try to build the right path for her so she's going the right way. Strange we went into down this path. We started to this topic of 25% of adults living at home. And so we'll just keep moving down, moving on, because it's just some more clown world financial stuff I do want to talk about. Another thing is Americans, they have started falling behind on their car payments. And this is now at a higher rate now than it ever was, even higher than it was in 2009. And this is as per Bloomberg. This, I think, is a very... it's the canary in a coal mine type thing, because you look at what people are going to stop paying, mortgages / rent, car payments.
This is Len's hierarchy of loans, not to be confused with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Len's hierarchy of loans. What's the first one I'm going to stop paying?
There's no hierarchy. I'm just saying the three things that typically, these are the big ticket items that you're going to stop paying. It's going to be mortgage / rent. It's going to be car payments and credit cards. I'm not sure everybody's going to be different, but when you see something, one of these three come up and there's a higher rate of delinquencies, well, I think we're going down a path here that's going to be very, very difficult to unwind here. It's even if you look at there, people are struggling to pay for car loans. Surprisingly, Lamborghinis, they're still reportedly sold out for whatever reason until 2024. So people that have money, they fucking sold out on all the Lambos. And so if you want to get one, if you have a lot of Bitcoin and you made a bank on that, you unfortunately have to wait a couple of years before you can get your hands on one of those. Another thing that is also concerning, aside from the fact that car loans are behind payment, the New York Times is reporting that America's trade deficit has surged in 2022. It's nearly $1 trillion. In fact, it's $948 billion.
Only $1 trillion? No big deal.
Yeah, for the year. So that rose $103 billion from the previous year. So that's, I would quick Len math, that's, I don't know, 8-9. Well, actually more than that. It's 11%, a little 12%. That's a massive jump. And I've talked about this offline. The trade deficit is something you can't have continually year after year, month after month, and expect to maintain quality of life. Eventually, you erode the purchasing power of whatever currency you're using. You can do it for some time, but it's like you're drawing water from a bucket. Eventually, the bucket is dry, and there's nothing else you could do over there. But I don't know. I think that's something that it's now just, it's a ship that's long been sailed. Nobody gives a shit about it anymore, unfortunately. Remember last week, Joey, we talked about the 517,000 jobs that were created in the month of January. 517. This is an enormous number that far exceeded expectations. I want to see what happens in February, because now Zoom is reporting they're going to be laying off 15% of their staff. Their CEO, kudos to this person, he's taking a salary reduction of 98%. Took a look at this. He made just over $300,000 in 2021. So that means he's going to gross $6,000 if it's a 98% decrease. And I'm sure he's going to get also bonuses and other things along with it. But in terms of salary, man, that's a pretty good thing to do to show that you're doing things for the company. But 15% of the layoffs for Zoom, that's 1,300 hard workers that are gone. Probably high-paying jobs too. Yahoo also announced they're going to be laying off 20% of their staff moving forward. That's going to be another 1,600 jobs that are going to be gone. And again, these are high paying jobs. I don't know if they're going to be captured correctly.
Did you mention there that the mayor of Toronto laying his staff too? Oh, you said laying.
It was just, I'm going to go on a tangent here. Do you know exactly how it transpired? No. The way I understand it is,
were you there? What do you mean how did it transpire?
No. Nothing was going to be done. He was going to continually do his job until a report that was going to be leaked or done by the Toronto Star. That came out, just before that came out, he decided, that's it, I'm done. So it's unfortunate that it took that, a report from the Toronto Star to leak. I don't know. That's just absolute crap. But anyways, back to the job cuts in the United States. Remember, so many jobs were created in January. February, there's no fucking way they're going to say that there's job creations. Unless they could fudge the numbers, and we'll see what happens. But good news is, a lot of these people, I know they were high-paying jobs. They could probably land something at McDonald's, which, what would you classify a McDonald's job as? Is it skilled worker, general labor? In what classification would you put it at? I'm just curious, in your eyes. Just a generic.
If it, if it shows up in one of those like Wojak videos, like McWages or whatever, like if you get made fun of it, like in that way, I don't know, you probably
it's general labor, right?
Another like, designation for that. I don't know. McWages.
But see, a lady by the name of Nina Turner, and I talked about her before in the show. I think she was a no coiner. She's a former Ohio senator, and she's also tried to be a congressional hopeful, but she failed in that, trying to push her for basic income, universal basic income. She says that McDonald's workers are, quote, skilled labor, end quote. This is the type of thinking that is going to be moving America forward. Skilled workers and UBI. It's skilled workers working at McDonald's, and because the McDonald's is a skilled labor job. Incredible stuff. Also, I just want to say that Unusual Whales, you talked about them earlier in the show. They released the two new ETFs that are now live this past week. NANC, or Nancy. That's going to be following the security purchases, equity and security purchases by the Democrat members of Congress and their spouses. Also, Cruz, KRUZ or Z, depending where you live in the world. That's going to be also following the Republican Congress and their spouses for their security purchases moving forward. So that's very, very interesting that there's these two ETFs that are going to be released, and they already are live. And if you want to follow these members of Congress, you're free to do so. But note, this is going to be delayed. By the time they bought and it's actually reported and the ETF purchases them, well, the gains could have already been massive and you're just picking up the tailwinds at that point. So that's it for Clown World. There's some more, but I would like to talk about, you know, we've been at this for quite some time. We should get things moving along.
I can't believe this. This is the second story hour already. This show has been like flying by the last few weeks. And I got to say, I've enjoyed it. We've had some good back and forth here the last couple of weeks.
Do you want anything else you want to talk about?
We talked about it. I mean, I was hopping in there a little bit. I think, Len, if there was ever like, we got to send this to Massa, friend of the show, Massa, for late stage fiat, McDonald's, skilled labor. Yeah. It's like incredible. I was just saying in the chat, there's a documentary about McDonald's on Netflix. And it's funny, I used to work at this pawn shop in Hamilton. And the owner of the shop, whose name I won't mention, incredible guy, just a great businessman, not formally educated, but used to talk all the time about how the businesses that are the most successful and scalable use the bell. The bell is what makes the McDonald's operation run, or did, you know, who knows what kind of tech they have in place now, but it's not about whether or not you know if the fries are ready to go. It's not about whether or not you know the burgers are ready to go. It's not about whether you know when to stop the coffee pot, whatever. All you have to do is do something when the bell rings. Either put the fries in when the bell rings, or you take the fries out when the bell rings. You know, like McDonald's is probably truly the least skilled labor on the market, evidenced by the demographic of people who generally work there. It's retirees, you know, who are looking for something to do, and kids who are looking for their first exposure to the job market. And yeah. You know, one of them is looking for low effort. The other is looking for first time employment. And yeah. To call that skilled labor, truly late stage fiat level stuff. I'll just, you know, that's all I'll add.
So I put on the chat the actual tweet that I'm talking about. So if you want to reply back to her, don't waste your time. But if you do, it's there. But let's move on to the last.
I posted it, but don't go.
Go on it, but don't write on it. Like don't give her any. Added felicity here. It's not worth it, but CBDC. So we can talk about that next.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, before we even go down this, because I know there's going to be the UK Treasury is talking about releasing something this year or this decade. Sorry. The Bank of Canada, I just saw today.
Released a paper late. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Central Bank Digital Currencies and Banking Literature Review and New Questions. And it's interesting doc. I've only went to about a third of it so far. And it's an interesting document which talks about how they're going to be able to implement a CBDC within the framework right now with banks. When you have commercial banks, when they're earning revenue through borrowing money, it's a creation of money through borrowing and so forth. So it's interesting how they're trying to framework it in such a way that it would work, that it wouldn't interrupt the commercial banking system, or at least try to do so. I'm going to go through the rest of this paper. The fact that the Bank of Canada has released this, and this is not the first time they talked about anything to do with CBDCs. They're doing a lot of research into this, and which could be, you know, a telltale sign of what's to come in the next little while. But I do want to be a little bit more specific here with CBDC talk. The UK Treasury, so as I mentioned earlier, they plan to roll out a digital pound this decade, by the end of this decade. So it's going to be called, I guess, a Britcoin. I think that's the name that's being thrown around. So essentially, it's a CBDC. And if you think it's around the corner, it's not, because they're not even going to build it until 2025. And even when it's built, don't expect it to be rolled out. There's going to be a lot of trial that needs to be done behind the scenes before somebody gets to see it. Interestingly enough, they're saying that the UK citizens could potentially be limited to holding between 10,000 British pounds and 20,000 British pounds of the currency. And this would be at the very onset of this. And the reason for this, what they're saying is this is a way not to undermine traditional banking. Interesting thoughts. And yeah, as per CoinDesk, they say the range of holdings would allow between 75 and 95% of UK earners to take their salary without breaching holding limits, the document said, but could vary by individual, it added, citing differences based on region, age, and gender. They're saying there could be a fear of a bank run because consumers may choose to hold on to central bank money directly, as it's perceived to be safer than holding the cash and putting it into a bank and storing it in a bank. I can see that. But it also makes me wonder, you know about the narrow bank? Have you heard about narrow bank before, Joey?
No, I don't think so.
So, I mean, I'll touch on this in a bit then. So it almost reminds me of this in a way. But they say that, quote, this might have advantages in guaranteeing consistency and resilience, end quote. This is with respect to the CBDC. And while presenting, quote, privacy, scalability, and security challenges, end quote. Privacy, I'm always skeptical when it comes to this. They say the digital pound would have the least level of privacy as bank accounts would. So they would have the same level of privacy as bank accounts would, and also allow users to make choices about the data they use. So they're thinking that there's going to be the same level of privacy when you use a CBDC versus what you're putting your money in the bank. I don't think so, because this is programmable money. When you're dealing with programmable money, you could put whatever you want in the program itself to institute some sort of identity, not theft, but a way to identify where the money is, who's holding it. And it's a scary situation when you institute a CBDC, because it makes central banks then a potential political tool that could be used. Because when you could program the money to do whatever you want, you could program the money in such a way that it could be used to spend in a certain situation. And you could almost change the way people's habits, spending habits are done. So it could potentially be used as a potential weapon that could be used against their own citizens.
You can be nudged, right? If you have the capability, you can be nudged. Of course, your behavior will change.
Yeah, it certainly could. And another thing to note, it changes the relationship between the central bank and the government. I always looked at central banks as like a parasite. It can't really exist without the government in which it serves. And so to me, it's almost like a parasitic relationship. But in terms of when a CBDC is then rolled out, now you have a relationship that is going to be beneficial to both parties. And instead of having one being a parasite, now it's one working with the other. And it totally changes the relationship of what's going on. So they're both would be sort of beneficiaries in a way. One thing of note is that the British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, look at his relationship with the WEF. And now he's the guy that's spearheading this CBDC. I'll talk about Neurobank in a little bit. I want to hear your thoughts about this.
Well, I'll tell you, I had a conversation with a friend of mine just via text message last week. And I was saying to her that, you know, this is something worth keeping an eye on. She's kind of a pre-coiner, has a little bit of Bitcoin on ShakePay. And, you know, I try and share stuff with her once in a while. Really, she's my wife's friend, but obviously my friend now as well. And, you know, she is of the opinion that anything to do with the idea that we should be preparing for CBDCs that intentionally or unintentionally limit economic freedoms and mobility as well. I think there's going to be a mobility element to this. You and I have talked about this sort of, you know, 15-minute city spending inside of certain jurisdictions only. Anything of that nature is tinfoil hat conspiracy stuff. And if I look at the paper, There's a lot of stuff in there about how it'll help businesses and banks manage their balance sheet more effectively. And, you know, as you mentioned there, there's some other, you know, intended for consequences that are beneficial to the participants in a CBDC network. But at the end of the day, you know, I would just say to her and to you and to everyone else that there's nothing wrong.
Uh-oh, we lost Joey once again. It looks like he's saying something that is not agreeing with
the system we have now as far as CAT.
Oh, you're back.
I'm back. I would say there's nothing, if you look at CBDCs, like I was saying, there's nothing wrong with using cash, but for certain people, certain institutions, certain organizations that think that private spending is a net negative. Well, private spending is exactly that. It's not like there's any other sort of, any other tangential consequence to private spending. Do people break laws sometimes with private spending? Yeah. People break laws on highways too. People use highways to do things that are illegal. We don't try and ban highways or put checkpoints everywhere. And when we talk about, cash, oftentimes it's framed this way that you're made to think or made to feel like having cash or wanting to have cash is somehow nefarious, a nefarious intent. It's not. And the only reason to put in something like CBDCs is to eliminate private spending. By their own admission, the privacy thing is a problem. And like this idea that, it's going to be good for people on the whole, I don't buy it. I mean, obviously we don't buy it, but I think the bigger question is how do you convince people like my friend that there's clearly some other intention here besides helping businesses manage their balance sheets? This is not it, right? This can't be it.
Well, until proven otherwise, it's just conspiratorial. So you look like you're wearing a tinfoil hat. One thing I forgot to mention is that with the releases of a CBDC, a full retail CBDC, it would put create competition towards stable coins. And I'm not sure if this is the intention to root out stable coins and to make them obsolete, but I think that's going to be one of the end results of this. Because if you can use a CBDC, theoretically, why would you use a stablecoin? I understand there may be some reasons why you'd use a stablecoin, but on the surface, I think a lot of people would say, screw that, I'd rather just use a CBDC. And if they could start using CBDCs even abroad, and they could alleviate some of the liquidity issues in some countries, because that's what the problem is right now, the hard cash, hard US dollars is not available in a lot of countries. If they could just use it CBDC somehow, it could then solve that problem and deal with the usage of stable coins. I think that's another thing. The narrow bank too, I just want to, because I when I always read about CBDCs and how it's going to work in the framework right now of commercial banks, and it always brings me back to narrow bank, because narrow bank, and I read this a while back. It was in the Fiat standard that Saifedean wrote not too long ago, last year, I think, a year and a half ago. So narrow bank was going to be the first bank in the United States that's going to be offering institutional clients an ability to place money there. And they have what they call a master account with the Federal Reserve. And so when institutional clients do that, they have the stability knowing that their money will not be rug pulled and lost, because it's ultimately stored in the Federal Reserve and it's earning interest straight from the Fed. The interest would be, of course, very competitive. Would be tied directly to the overnight lending rate. So you're not going to be making bank, but it's not for everyday people like you and I. It'd be for institutions that have large amounts of capital, like Apple, for instance, and they could put their money in there and collect a small amount of interest, but know that their money is safe. Hmm. But unfortunately, the application for the narrow bank was denied because it was going to create too much, not complexity, but it's too much competition for traditional banks, because nobody would then use, and none of these big clients would use traditional banks, because there's a level of risk when you do so. They would just use narrow bank and they don't want to do that, so they denied their application. But so that reminds me, like, if the narrow banking system or the model, it's almost like using a CBDC kind of a way, because you're putting the money in there and it seems to be there's some overlap between the two. Maybe not in totality, but it just reminds me of it. That's just my two cents. I'm not sure if there's anything else you want to add to this whole CBDC thing, because this is something that's just going.
You have to keep an eye out for it. Is the thing I would say to people. Like these position papers that are being put out are not being put out by accident, right? They're test flights for public opinion, and it sucks because I feel like no one reads this stuff, right? Like yeah, we see it because of our exposure to Bitcoin and Bitcoiners care about this kind of stuff, but like generally speaking, no one reads it. And the first time they roll this out, they're gonna say like, oh, here's the problem with, you know, traditional cash for this payment, this stimmy, this whatever. We're going to use this now. You put this on your phone and you got this digital wallet. You can use it anywhere. And it's going to be too late. Once you get the destitute through the door, the rest is history. You know, this is the case all the time. So we got to be aware of these things. Be cautious. Again, like Odell and others say, you got to know how to use Bitcoin. Because when you need to use Bitcoin, it's going to be too late to learn. Yeah, and this is an important thing to keep in mind.
Well said. Let's move on. Clown World North. Late in the show to get start this topic, but let's do it. Let's see if we just hammer away. Do you remember, and I talked about it earlier in the show, the United States in January, they said that they announced job creation, 517,000 jobs were created. So that was a decent number. Canada also did something. They exceeded expectations wildly for January. The Canadian economy added 150,000 jobs.
Amazing.
And stats. 150,000. And you know what? That's 10x.
I know.
The expectations. 10x. At least the 517 was 2.75x. That's within the realm of possibility. I mean, it's a stretch. 10x. That's incredible. They're saying the unemployment rate holds steady at 5% since September, and they also added 326,000 jobs since then. Some interesting stats, Joey. This is provided by Twitter user Ben Robidoux.
Ben Robidoux. Ben Robidoux. He's great. I want him on the show. I've tried to get him on the show before.
Isn't it Ben Robidoux?
Robidoux.
Robidoux, okay, my bad.
He did Tom and Nick's show because they're all real estate, you know, they got the pact there between the three of them. So I think after we get Soretsky in March, I'm gonna parlay all of that into Robidoux because Robidoux is funny, man. He was good on Tom and Nick's show. You should listen to that if you haven't.
Well, he writes on Twitter on a year-over-year basis. Now, this is with all respect to 150,000 jobs that were created in January of this year. Employment for year-over-year basis, for those who are not born in Canada and have never been a landed immigrant, was up 13.3% in January compared to a growth in total employment of 2.8%. So really, you're looking for an employment boom for the people that are non-permanent residents. So job vacancies were at a sky high in the second half of 2022. Permanent resident numbers were up considerably last year too. So you could then justify that all this is due to jobs that were there, but they're just being filled in by newly landed immigrants. But also not only that, from Stats Canada, they reported under latest quarterly population data, the increase in non-permanent residents, this is people that are here on work permits and other types of documents that allow them to work illegally in Canada. Well, there was an increase in the third quarter of 2022, that was larger than any full year increase since 1971. So one quarter in 2022 was larger than any full year increase since 1971. So many people came into Canada in 2022 under non-permanent resident status categories. And the increase was driven primarily by work permit holders. So that's what's essentially filling these jobs. There were jobs that needed to be filled, but they were being filled by newly landed immigrants. That's essentially what it is. So if this is something you should be happy about, celebrating, whatever, that's the way I understand it to be. So there may be some fudging here, there may be something, but that's essentially the way I gather it. And also, people, they're reporting that the deficit in Canada, well, it's going in the right direction because they're saying that Canada has the lowest deficit in the G7. I'm not sure if you saw this, but when you look at it,
you're just about to say it. Go ahead. Took the words.
Yeah. The per capita. So the household debt as a percentage of income for number one, you could look at Canada's number one. It dwarfs everybody else. Per capita too, it's pretty bad. So it's, you can say that we have the lowest, but our population by comparison is rather low as well. So you have to take everything into context here. You can't just take one thing and omit the rest. You have to absorb everything. Then you fucking put the equation and you figure out what's the number. When people do this, they're disingenuous. They're not giving you the whole information. You have to take in everything. And I hate when they don't do that, when they don't give us everything. They're giving us just a small segment of what they want us to see. And with that, they're trying to base our judgment on just a very, very small little bit of data. I hate this fucking bullshit. I want to see more information. It's just, it drives me nuts. But even this with the inflation talk, because you know there's a lot of inflation that's going on that we talked about in the past year, especially in Canada. Stats Canada is showing who's getting fucked the most. Their data is showing that the net average household savings have declined across all income brackets. But the trend is more alarming for households in the bottom 40% because they tend to spend more than they earn in income. Check this one out. Very scary. During the third quarter of 2022, for example, households in the bottom 20% of income earners spent about $7,400 more than they earned. And this is in comparison to Q3 2021. That figure was $6,550. So that could be accounted for inflation, but it still shows me that this problem of people spending more than they take in, it's a problem that hasn't been addressed. And it's only going to get worse as the price of shit goes up. You have to pay more money to eat. You have to pay more money in transportation, more money for clothes.
Yeah.
This is a problem that's just going to get even worse. And in fact, the Bank of Canada, their governor, Tiff Macklem, he was saying that the household debt levels prompted earlier interest rates pause. So in fact, if this was not an issue, I suspect based on his wording, that they would continually raise interest rates. And if they're going to raise their interest rates this year, who the heck knows? They might not. I don't know. I don't have a clue. But I'm just going to go into the housing market really quick. Scotiabank, their CEO, he was saying that 20,000 Scotiabank mortgage holders could default. And this represents about 2.5% of their customers. So it's a pretty significant number that they're thinking that could default. And this is because that the Bank of Canada interest rates, they just go up and up. And it's now causing a lot of the household rates to reach their, I think it's more than half of variable mortgage rates have reached their trigger point as of November, which is an incredibly high number. The last thing I just want to say is Canadians now believe they need $1.7 million in savings in order to retire. This is a 20% increase from 2020. That's way above inflation, official inflation numbers for the past 2 years. This is according to a BMO survey. And so this is a drastic increase from 2020. It was $1.4 million. Now they're saying $1.7 million in savings. I don't know how much money people have, but $1.7 million in savings. Unless you have a house that's fully paid off and you're living in an area that is affluent and you can sell it off, a lot of people are going to be fucked. Between that number that I just mentioned and one I quoted earlier about how much people have the median savings people have for retirement, this goes to show me that moving forward, there's going to be a lot of money that's going to have to be helicoptered into people because they have no way to feed themselves and to make ends meet. I think we're fucked.
So you mentioned there, you don't know how much money people have. You do have some idea from that other survey, right? The certain people think you need 1.7 million to retire. That same group has, what did you say? 50K in savings, some of them to retire.
That's sounds pretty US. Like,
but still, well, whatever. I mean, if you think it's better in Canada, I would argue it's probably actually less in Canada for a number of different reasons. Typically here, our jobs pay less, our goods cost more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly we're not doing as well on a per capita GDP basis. Keith Dicker was speculating on Looney Hour last week that one of the ways you can tell that banks are getting ready for a big set of loan defaults is that they're putting more and more money into these loan protection accounts. And RBC went from putting zero in, I think a quarter ago, to basically like, you know, I don't want to say doing a double because you can't double from zero, but you get the idea. A significant jump in how much they're putting away because they see the writing on the wall. The saving grace here, I think, for people who are in the stock market, in Bitcoin, in housing, is that Macklem and the BOC are looking at household debt and saying, like, this is unsustainable. Now, you mentioned there are a couple of things that kind of compound on each other, the cost of all this stuff. We talked on the show about how the laptop class is going to go back to work for the first time in 2 years. This is probably about 6-7 months ago. We were talking about this. They're going to go back to work for the first time in 2 years on some semi-regular basis. You know, I think in Canada, people have been going to work with some frequency for probably about a year. But in the news now, the public service is going back to work at least 2 days a week, for example. And those people are going back to work and starting to have exposure to those higher prices for the first time, basically since the pandemic started. Gas at, you know, $2 a liter, all the costs of food. I went to buy milk just before the show at Shoppers Drug Mart. It was $6 for milk. You know, $9 if you buy that True Taste stuff. Sometimes I buy it when it's on sale for $5, but you know, $9 for that. 12 eggs is $4. You know, it used to be $4 for 18 eggs. So they're exposed to all that. Now, Worsland, you mentioned there, we've talked about this before, the kind of growing credit card debt as a percentage of household debt and all this stuff. Credit cards operate generally on you know, floating rates. Your credit card rate goes up as the prime rate goes up. And people who have more to spend, less to pay off every month, are going to be paying more in interest now. So you're always getting piled on by policymakers at the Bank of Canada, you know, vis-a-vis the pain you're suffering through inflation and now the pain you're suffering through interest payments as well. So I look at this and I think something's got to give. And to me, you mentioned there, you know, another kind of golden question. What is the rate going to be at the end of the year? Is the rate going to be where it is now or is it going to be lower? I don't know. I'm not confident one way or another, but I don't think that it's going to be higher than where it is right now. I'll say that much. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys say they're going to look at this and they might raise again, blah, blah, blah. US CPI is tomorrow, so we'll see where they come down. I think tomorrow is the first day of the base effect change, the first month of the base effect change. It's either this month or March. So in the public perception, inflation is going to be much lower. You're already seeing Biden talk about how inflation is, prices are going down over the last 6 months. He's saying in his public appearances now, and so is KJP, even though that's not really true. The speed at which prices are accelerating has slowed down, but prices are not coming down. All that said though, to the general public, to the normie audience, those press conferences and the words they use are very specifically chosen. They're chosen for a reason. I think you're starting to see this idea that, oh, well, we got inflation down. Now it's safe to ease up on rates or keep rates where they are instead of raising. And Powell can say whatever he wants. And Kashkari can say whatever he wants. And Rafael Bostic can say whatever he wants in the Fed public appearances and minutes. But you know, no matter how many times they say that a pause does not mean a cut, a pause has always meant a cut. It is the next step. A pause is followed by a cut. In every instance, this has been the case. So this idea that it's not coming, I think, is wrong. And so I hope I'll wrap it here. The times when you, I think I said this last week, but I'll say it again. The times when you feel like you have to stop investing and pay down some of these debts you might have, or add money to your mortgage, or you know, batten down the hatch, add to your emergency fund. That, in my view, not financial advice. In my view, that is a time when you have to be buying stocks at the greatest rate, because that's just when the ship is going to turn around in all likelihood. And we'll see. I mean, short of an alien invasion, you talked a lot about inflation there. You didn't talk about any of the balloons that have been inflated over the United States over the last few weeks. But
it could be an NFT airdrop. That's my thoughts on that.
Could be. But yeah. Anyway, so like, just hang in there, man. And or woman, hang in there. Don't panic. Don't start selling assets to pay down, you know, your home equity line of credit or whatever. But instead, think about how wealth is transferred from people who panic, people who are too poor to hold on to their equity in certain companies or hold on to their Bitcoin or whatever during times of high pressure. You know, this is when wealth is transferred from the poor to the rich. Don't be part of that. Don't be part of that transfer.
And for anybody out there that thinks things are going to be moving in the right direction, I'm always going to say no. I'm going to say that's probably the wrong way of looking at it. There's a lot of external factors that's going to have to be taken into consideration. And anytime something comes into play that you didn't anticipate, this is going to change the way the economy is going to react, and also the central banks are going to react. Without them, if there would be no potential war, no more psyoping with these balloons. I'm almost of the opinion maybe Canada would increase rates one or two more times this year. I wouldn't be shocked to see that happen.
No way.
The economy,
it's untenable. It's untenable for homeowners.
I don't think they give a shit. I think that until they could reach that 4% is, I think, what they want to get to. But really, they want to get to something much, much lower. And they don't give a shit. Because let's be honest, the Bank of Canada is not a political position. It's not something that is you're voted in. It's an appointed position.
Yeah, but they are a political machine. They can pretend they're arm's length, but they are not. They are not. And you know they're not. You know they're not.
They are not voted in. So because of that, and because the guy that's there, he's only going to get turfed is if there's a change in government. He almost has carte blanche to do what he wants. And even if he does get turfed, what's going to happen? He's going to get severance pay and all this. Who gives a shit? He's fucking living on Easy Street. So he's doing things that it's almost like it's a simulator. And there's no repercussions for it. It's almost like that. I'm saying this as tongue in cheek, by the way. But you know, that's the way I'm looking at it. So that's why I could see theoretically, if there's no external factors in play here, they might raise it one or two times this year. But I mean, we are very, very close to having some sort of war that's launched. When more and more equipment is being sent, more ammunition is being sent over to Eastern Europe, opposition is going to keep looking at that and say, what the fuck's going on? Like, eventually they're going to have to do something. I mean, they have to do something, but I could see them doing some sort of retaliation. And then it's just going to be an escalating thing because, well, they're aligned with China, right? Like, very much so. And this could be really, really a fucking problem moving forward. I don't know. I don't see what's the end game. I know I'm talking more about the war right now, but that's going to be something that's going to fucking torpedo the economy in a massive way, because nobody's fucking predicted this in their models moving forward. It's going to be just a fucking disaster.
Buddy, you know, what else can I say to that? It's an interesting time to be an investor. That's, you know, that's where I'll leave it. That's for sure. Armstrong Economics, by the way, predicts war in 23 or early, like some early spring fireworks that are going to really ripple through markets. Who knows if he'll be right or not, but it's in his model. So worth looking at if you haven't already.
Yeah. Joey, we've been at this for a long time. I think that's it.
Yeah. Hour and a half. Holy shit. Holy shit.
I mean,
I am exhausted, by the way, exhausted today. It feels like Mondays for me are so busy at work now, and I didn't get home today till like, I don't know, after five. It was after five when I got home, and I've been going since 5:30 or something this morning. Long ass day.
So I don't have a Bitcoin or no coiner. I was originally going to have.
I got one. You're going to love it. It's
floor is yours, man.
It's President Nayib Bukele.
Bitcoiner or no coiner? I'm hoping a Bitcoiner.
Bitcoiner.
Thank you.
I was skeptical of their ability to repay the infamous, nearly $1 billion bond offering that they took advantage of, I think, about 2 years ago now. They paid the whole thing with interest. And all those news articles, Bloomberg, Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, that were talking about how this was a risk, they haven't published anything about how he paid off all the debt. And it's to his credit. Jaime Garcia has come on the show before and basically held the same viewpoint that a lot of the stuff was FUD. They have no points. They have no foundation for making these claims that he's not gonna be able to pay the thing. In my view, I just thought 800 million is an awful lot with Bitcoin in the tank. Their buy and hold strategy right now is, pretty deep underwater, but they did it, Len. So I owe that guy an apology, though I'm sure he doesn't listen to the show. You'll never hear it, but I owe him an apology. He was right. And he's been vindicated, at least in that regard. Now, the next big thing they got to do is that sort of volcano / Bitcoin City thing, which is coming on this year or next year. But so far, Len, Bukele batting 1,000. So my Bitcoin of the week for proving the Fudsters wrong, including one on this show. So good on him, man. It's great to see that.
Yeah, this was something we talked about. You were not there at the time. It was Tom and I were talking about this repayment, and it was something that's just good on them. Not only that, this past week there was some news. I was going to talk about it today, but we ran out of time. But I think we'll bring it up. The IMF. Well, they're admitting that El Salvador's Bitcoin risk did not materialize as they thought so. And they're saying that the real GDP in El Salvador, they're expecting it to grow by 2.4% in 2023. And that is above historical average. So even the IMF is starting to eat crow here, because they thought that, well, that when they were going to be buying Bitcoin, there's a level of risk along with it. And certainly there was, but it just never materialized. And here they are coming through on the other side and showing that they're able to deal with everything, yeah, holding Bitcoin and still buying it. I think they're still buying it a very, very minute amount. Really cool stuff over there. But I've said it many, many times, countries like El Salvador, they don't have a central bank anymore that issues their own currency. So they have the most to gain and the least to lose by doing an adoption of Bitcoin on some level. So we'll probably see more of this moving forward, but as long as it's working in El Salvador, it's probably going to be something that's going to be copied moving forward. If it failed in El Salvador, the likelihood of another country doing the same thing would be much, much less, almost near zero.
Yes, so, you're right. You're right. This is a good thing. It's an important signpost. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So with that, I think we're done with this episode, Joey.
We're done, man. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for listening, watching. I'll get the price of Bitcoin here.
We went down, man.
Did we?
Yeah. Not much.
My block clock not showing. 21,709 US right now. Ugh. Yeah. And you know what, though? It's stacker's paradise.
Yeah. And in Canadian, it's under 29,000. We're sitting at 28,996. Could be a better stacker's paradise. It could be 19, 18, 17, 16, or who knows?
If the war you keep predicting actually breaks out at some point, we'll get it.
I'm not predicting it's going to come to be. I'm just saying it's always an option that's on the table, especially if you're going to keep feeding more and more stuff for the opposition. Why are they going to sit there and take it? They're not going to just get kicked in the nuts over and over again. They're going to have to fight back. Not have to fight back. I can see them trying to do something, and it could escalate into something really big and really bad. Let's hope not, though.
Agreed. Thanks for listening and watching, everyone. If you're on audio, come over to YouTube, where we're going to talk a bit about some of the dumb things I've ordered up from the internet over the last week. All Bitcoin related, though. And we do want to have at least one person who I patronized come on the program in the next little while. I haven't even told them, but we'll talk about it after. Yeah, we'll talk about it in the after shows. Come on over to YouTube. And until next time, Wednesday night, Hoddle D, potentially another guest as well. Take care of yourselves. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, take care and PV.